From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Tomorrow, we're going to get gift book suggestions with booksellers from across the state. So if you're looking for someone or something for the history or fiction or biography buff in your life, or maybe you just want to hear about some thoughts on best books of the year from people who sell them by hand, you can join us. And we welcome your suggestions. You can leave us a voicemail at 404-500-9457 or find us on Twitter and Facebook. And be sure to join us at 9 tomorrow for more. Atlanta's Cyclorama is back. The 18,000-square-foot spectacle was looking faded and anachronistic by 2011 when the city considered scrapping it. Instead, the 360-degree image of the Battle of Atlanta is being restored and will open at the Atlanta History Center in February of next year. Jack Hitt is co-host of the Uncivil podcast, and that won a Peabody Award for telling historically accurate stories about the Civil War. His article, The Salvation of Atlanta, similarly revises common beliefs about the Cyclorama, and it is in the December issue of Smithsonian Magazine, and he's on the line with us now. Jack Hitt, hello.
Hi, Virginia. How
well,
you doing?
I am really glad to speak with you because this was a fascinating story. I've been hearing about the Cyclorama for a long time. People I know of a certain age said that they went on school trips every year to the Cyclorama, and you went as a kid. What do you remember?
I did. My mother and her best friend and that friend's daughter, we all got in a car one day and went to Atlanta to for a weekend trip or something. And we did Stone Mountain. It was a kind of neo-Confederate tour, don't you? So I grew up in Charleston, South Carolina. So, Atlanta's, that's a distant city for when you're a little kid. But when we got there, the big entertainments were the giant carving on the side of Stone Mountain and of course, the Cyclorama.
So you went big.
We did. It was all about big stuff.
what exactly is a Cyclorama?
So, it's really an old medium. I mean, think about like cassette tapes or 8-track or your Kodak Brownie camera. We live in an era of discarded, old, dead media. And this is the great grandfather of dead media. So in the 1880s, this is like 20 years before movies. So we're all in this sort of like inventive moment of coming up with media that would allow us to see something that felt three-dimensional. You remember your great-grandparents, like stereoscopes and all that?
Mm-hmm.
So this was a giant sort of epic version of that. You would go into this room and walk up onto a platform, and suspended all the way around you 360 degrees would be this 2.5-story painting that was 1.5 football fields in diameter, right, or circumference. And it would be bowed out in a funny way, and the lighting would hit only the painting so that when you stood there, it was as if you were standing on a top of a hill, seeing the entire battlefield around you, like some kind of commanding general. And understand also that at this time, like, there was no aerial photography. There was, a little bit of etchings in Harper's Magazine. Matthew Brady's photographs were around, but like the big picture was something that you had to conjure in your imagination.
So this just blew people's minds, right? IMAX, I guess.
Right. And the way the painting is set up, the way it's painted and bowed, it gave this three-dimensional sort of like, illusion to your eye and brain. So it really felt like you were standing in a three-dimensional space. So it was kind of freaky, too.
When you write about it, when it opened in Minneapolis, this was the Battle of Atlanta. Cyclorama opened in Minneapolis, northern audience, of course, 1886. So, a couple decades after the war ended. And it was praised by even General Sherman, he was quoted in the newspapers, for giving a sense of being in battle and depicting a very specific moment of the battle. So could we get a quick history refresher on the Battle of Atlanta?
So the Battle of Atlanta is ultimately a Confederate loss, but that was not certain until the very end. So at the time, Atlanta was, the juncture of these railroad lines. It was this crucial city, as it still is in the life of the regional South, right? And so at this precise moment in July, the Northerners had set up this artillery line, and the Southerners at one point had broken through and were rushing in to take on the now the seemingly scattered, you know, behind the lines, Northern fighters. And then from far away, Blackjack Logan, General Logan, comes swooping down and pushes the Southerners back behind that artillery line. And that all happened in sort of one late afternoon moment, they say around 4:45 p.m. And when that pushback happened, essentially that kind of concludes Atlanta's fall. And then Sherman marches to the sea after that. Lincoln wins re-election. This is summer of 1864, wins re-election that fall, and the war comes to its end.
So a super really tense moment.
Yeah, this is a very tense moment. This is, you know, fourth and 15 to go, and when the ball is snapped, no one quite knows what's going to happen, and that's kind of captured all in this painting that you're standing in.
It's in Minneapolis. And Paul Atkinson, 1891, you call him, I think, a sort of low-grade P.T. Barnum, buys it and brings it to Atlanta, the scene of the Battle of Atlanta, eventually.
It comes
down to the South first. So tell us about how it changed once it got down South.
It starts in Minneapolis. It goes to another northern city. And remember, you know, northern audiences had money, right? Because this is right after the war. This is in the Reconstruction era for the South. So the South is still broke. So all of these paintings were basically made for the northern audiences. But eventually they started to work their way down. You would roll up these things and travel down to the next city and set them up in some giant auditorium and charge a small admissions fee. And so when as it got sold, Atkinson, this kind of like poor man's kind of P.T. Barnum, brought this thing to Chattanooga. And when he hung it up, you know, he realized that, you know, there were certain aspects of this that just didn't fit into the story that the South was telling itself about the Civil War in the 1880s. Specifically, in this battle, there's a bunch of Confederates that have been taken prisoner. And you see this Yankee gentleman with a Confederate flag in his hand, right? The mark of surrender. And at this point, remember, the war, the way this everyone North and South is talking about the war is as kind of noble military campaign. This is when we get like the elevation of Lee as a great general and Stonewall Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
That's the conversation. So this all has to be about brave military procedure, right? And maneuvering and flanking maneuvers. And so having a bunch of Confederates being taken prisoner, losing, that didn't fit in. So Atkinson had all of those soldiers repainted as Northern soldiers fleeing battle.
So they just like wiped out the canvas and repainted.
Right. Just painted blue over the gray. Just went directly into got a pure, specific oil-based revisionist history. It's kind of marvelous, actually. And so now these people who are being marched off one way now look like they're running away. And so that shifted the battle just enough so that something that was a Union victory and sold that way in the North, by the time it gets down to Chattanooga and ultimately to Atlanta, right, in Bryant Park, it's declared the Great Southern Victory.
Wow.
So literally headlines in the paper saying, come see the Southern victory, the Battle of Atlanta. Maybe it's the first instance of what we might call fake news.
Yeah, that is. It was a pretty decisive battle, yet recast. We're talking
right.
with Jack Hitt. He's a frequent contributor to This American Life, and he wrote about the kind of twisted history and current restoration of the Atlanta Cyclorama for the December issue of the Smithsonian Magazine. So this vast painting's enjoyed by Yankees, praised by vets for its accuracy, then moves down south to be sold to Southerners, getting a little bit of a touch-up. But it arrived in the South at a really critical time, just about a generation after the Civil War, when the war was being recast as the Lost Cause. So what is behind that narrative?
Well, so, you know, the Lost Cause goes through a number of different cycles and revisions, right? So I was talking about the elevation of the generals as these kind of great military and smart strategic thinkers. And most kids grew up, you know, memorizing battles and maneuvers and flanking and all this kind of stuff. That kind of is the late 19th century version of the Lost Cause. After sort of Woodrow Wilson and, the rise of the Klan, there was a kind of like more user-friendly kind of racism that took hold in the South. And that's That's the, you know, Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben kind of version of the Lost Cause. It wasn't so bad. Slavery wasn't so bad. And here are these, you know, sort of retainer figures right on the box of your items there at the grocery store. And that kind of culminates in the Gone with the Wind story, the movie, which the production designer for that movie, which, you know, is really just Southern lifestyle. There's no battles, by the way, in the entire Gone with the Wind. It's not about the war. The war is way in the background. What's up front in that movie is the lifestyle of being a noble Southern aristocrat on the plantation. And so that more user-friendly sort of lifestyle of the South became really embodied in the new Confederate flag. So remember, the Confederate flag that Confederates fought under is not the one we all see, the St. Mm-hmm. Andrew's cross.
Right,
right?
The cross.
That became more stylized in the 20th century as the emblem. And so what you see in the painting is that the man who was the production designer for Gone with the Wind, Wilbur Kurtz, he's the guy who took over restoring the cyclorama in Atlanta in the 30s, right at the time that he is designing the look and feel of Gone with the Wind. And it's he who puts in dozens of, you know, the Confederate flag that we all now recognize as the Confederate flag. He puts in a sound system and has Dixie playing. It becomes this much more sort of like kind of jokey Dukes of Hazzard kind of version of the Battle of Atlanta.
Well, this is also at a time when many Confederate monuments were constructed in the early 20th century around the country, around the South. And, you know, by the time after the Voting Rights Act, certainly,
right,
any attempts to, it becomes terribly outdated. And I'm wondering if have been any attempts to sort of recontextualize the cyclorama, as some argue, is a means to keep Confederate monuments intact, to tell the story, put them in context, but keep them up.
Right. Well, you know, there's a very famous moment after the Civil Rights Act. So we're talking 1964, 65 era, right? And at that point, the cyclorama has been hanging in the zoo there in Atlanta for almost 100 years. It's tattered and old. It's not bowed anymore. He just kind of went in there and looked at it, you know,
mm-hmm.
kind of this sad, broken down sort of like circus attraction. Still advertised as this great Southern victory. And then, lo and behold, Atlanta elects Maynard Jackson mayor. And there's a kind of emperor's new clothes moment when the folks in the city government kind of wanted to junk the whole thing, just put it in storage, let it rot, and then maybe toss it away decades later. And Maynard Jackson went and looked at the painting and said, this is a Northern victory.
Hmm.
This is a victory that was instrumental in the emancipation of my people. And I think we should keep it and tell that story. And so then there was a new sound system put in. This one had James Earl Jones as the narrator. And let me just assure you that the story was somehow very, very different than what it had been under Wilbur Kurtz. And so the story of the cyclorama became a little closer to what actually it depicted, right? And then in a way you come up to now. It was almost being junked a couple of years ago again, for very similar reasons. It's tattered. At one point when they hung it in the zoo rotunda there, it didn't fit. So they just razored out about 6 feet the image and just stuck it together. Like whatever, you know. And and understand that one part of the visual effect was that at the bottom of the canvas, you would often have like dirt and sort of like campfires and like diorama stuff, like real world three-dimensional stuff that would add to the visual effect. And those were all life size. There was even like when Gone with the Wind premiered, right? And Rhett Butler came and saw the whole thing. Clark Gable famously said, it's fantastic, this cyclorama. The only thing I don't like about it is that I'm not in it. So Kurtz actually put a dummy of Clark Gable on the ground. And that will still be there, by the way, when you go see it today. So, but the what I'm going to say is that the bottom of the canvas had kind of rotted out. So it was really in terrible condition. And that's where it all lay until about, you know, 2 years ago.
So that's when Sheffield Hale of the Atlanta History Center, working with the real estate mogul Lloyd Whitaker, started raising money to restore it. $25 million, huge restoration project, going to be opening up in February here in Atlanta. And I'm going to let readers of Smithsonian Magazine look at some of the pictures, terrific photographs accompanying it, and also more of the story. It goes much deeper, but I'm so glad we touched on some of it. But I just want to ask you, with a half a minute left, basically, you are the host with Chenjerai Kumanyika of the Peabody Award-winning Uncivil podcast, which proposes to ransack American history, demystifying our understanding of the Civil War. So quickly, how does the cyclorama fit in?
Well, you know, so much of the Civil War got told in the sort of healing years of the 1880s and 90s, when the country was obsessed with, like, you know, reforging the Union, right? Putting both sides back together, that there was this very narrow kind of military story told about the Civil War. It's not that that's not true. That's very true. But there's a whole other war that was happening around that military war. And that war had to do with, like, things like this revisionist sort of painting making its way around the country. There were many insurrections, and there were breakaway states in the South, broke away from the Confederacy, right? But you don't hear these stories. There were copperheads and Southern sympathizers in the North. New York City tried to break away from the Union at one point. But these stories that complicate the simple healing narrative just really don't get told in our history books. And so Chenjerai and I decided, why don't we tell those stories?
Well, and you tell them well. And Jack Hitt, this one is just a terrific story, terrific read. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Jack Hitt, he's co-host of Uncivil. He's a This American Life contributor. And his article, The Salvation of Atlanta, is about the true history of the cyclorama, which reopens at the Atlanta History Center in February of 2019. His article is in the December issue of Smithsonian Magazine, really worth reading and looking at. The photographs are by Joshua Rashad McFadden. That's all we have time for today. Thanks so much for joining us, spending a little time with On Second Thought. We'll be back again tomorrow.